To the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. What up, Reinvest listeners? Thank you for tuning into another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. Excited to bring some fresh ideas to you guys today. We're always on the hunt to try and bring some high-level concepts or real estate strategies out there in the commercial realm and real estate investing and bring it to you, something that maybe you've heard of, but you haven't heard explained or in depth. And so we're just going to continue to try and bring that diversity. If you have any suggestions for us on topics that you would like us to cover, please reach out to us via LinkedIn, Facebook, and we would love to get that feedback from you. So without further ado, we are going to jump into today's topic and our guest, Drew Donaldson. Drew, how are you today?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you guys?
We're doing well out in Northwest Ohio. Where are you located?
I'm actually not far away from you. I'm South Central Pennsylvania. So I'm Pennsylvania, okay. Amish country, if you're familiar, Hershey chocolate, that kind of neck of the woods.
I've been there.
Hershey, Pennsylvania. Yeah. So beautiful place. We've got a couple of stories, my wife and I, from going to Allegheny National Forest.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Two ways to say that. Allegheny and Allegheny.
Which way's right?
I believe Allegheny if you're from this state.
Shoot. I literally had a 50-50 shot and I gaffed it. So beautiful place. I love Pennsylvania. What you guys call hills, we call mountains in Northwest Ohio.
Because it's so flat.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
oh,
we
yeah.
got nothing over here. It's like cornfields and bean fields and that's it. There's yep. zero hills. You can hardly sled. So
It's pretty sad, but no, thank you for jumping on today, Drew. And, we're going to talk about, I think something that is relevant to a lot of investors, entrepreneurs who are trying to, promote their brand, their services and their products and, grow house. Did I say it right?
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. Before. So Grow House is your marketing firm. Give us a little context to what it is that you do. And we'll jump into talking about our topic today.
Perfect. So really, Grow House is a new model agency. We have one specific thing that we do really well, which is helping people put together offers. So generally in the professional service world, so guys in real estate, very familiar with the idea of putting together an offer, whether it's, hey, this is how much we're going to buy this house for, or flip this house for, or what have you. I do the same, but I do it specifically for professional service firms. So this could be, and I've actually worked with real estate people in the past who, instead of just coming to the market with something that, you know, kind of reads like a traditional real estate offer, has, you know, maybe it's some seller's education connected to it, or maybe it's a connection thing where it's like, okay, you're living in your house and we'll connect you with a bunch of potential buyers instead of one. So really what it is defining an offer that sets you apart in the market. And so, you know, anyone can go into law school and become a lawyer. Anyone can go and put up a website saying you're a lawyer. But if there's five other lawyers in your town and they're all doing the same thing, it now just becomes a commodity game, right? Now you're just, well, who's the cheapest? When you have an offer, that differentiates you from the rest of the market. And so the winners, the people who really make a lot of money in their chosen field, are the ones that know how to craft great offers. And so not everyone's born with that skill. And for those people that aren't, that's who we serve. So we help them build that offer, launch it, get leads, and help them close more business.
And when you say that offer, I mean, it sounds synonymous. The way you're describing it, it's kind of like their unique sales proposition. Is that kind of the idea of it? Like, what are they offering to the market? Or is it a specific product that you're talking about?
No, it's very much, you know, I don't use the term USP because a lot of people think that's just something that belongs in your, you know, marketing Bible that sits on the shelf and collects dust. The offer is like, I mean, you eat, sleep, and breathe your offer, right? Like, it is the core of your business. So by putting it and just saying, oh, well, that's our unique value proposition, our unique selling proposition, I don't feel like it gives it the weight that mm-hmm. it really needs to hold in the business. So like for things, when I look at like a USP or a UVP, I'm looking more at like the technical details that separate you from the market. The offer is all of those things together, how you work with a customer, you know, what people think of you, how, what's your price point, what's the niche you're going after, all of those things together boil down to the offer.
We are going to get in some good stuff today because my brain is firing on different things related to marketing.
Firing on all two cylinders.
All two and a half cylinders. So now you have an interesting story though, Drew, because your timing in launching your company was call it good, call it bad. It was a really interesting timing, right? Because 2020 is when you really ramp things up, right?
Yeah, so I was at the end of a consulting gig in corporate America, and at the beginning of 2020, I knew I probably had like a year to year and a half left before I was going to leave. And so January of that year, I said, well, you know what? What am I going to do next? I was really burnt out in corporate America. Some people like being corporate consultants, not me, not really my cup of tea. So I was like, well, let me go back to what I know, which is small business. My whole family's in the small business community. So like, those are the people I grew up with. I know them the best. And the only thing that kept me out from helping them was the money, right? They couldn't afford to pay me what I needed to be paid to make a living.
Right.
But now, as you know, I'd been a consultant for almost 10 years at this point. Like technology had changed so much and so much, there were so many other avenues to kind of explore that. I was like, I should take another run at this. Like it didn't work before because, you know, people didn't have the money, but now I can do it at probably a fifth of the price and still make this work. So I started 2020 with a, you know, head full of steam and then immediately got, you know, dunked in the ice bath as all of us did that spring.
Right.
And instead of, you know, kind of just shelving it and saying, well, there'll be another day for that. I just started talking to small business owners and I spent all of 2020 talking to small business owners about what don't you like about working with marketers? What don't you like about consultants? What don't you like about people that call you and bother you to fix your website? Like what's wrong with our industry that makes it so that you guys don't hire us?
What did they say? Yeah. I'm really curious because we get solicited with that all kind of stuff all the time.
Everybody just tries to take my money and run. No one actually does the work. To consultants, one of my favorite interviews, the guy said, all consultants do is say pretty words and leave you with a binder. And I was like, that is the most like distilled version of consulting you could ever get. Because like his whole experience was like, yeah, I paid a consultant $5,000 to come in and optimize my business. And he gave an hour long presentation, handed me a binder and walked out the door. And that was optimizing my business. Nothing had changed. I just now had a new binder. And like that
and
was
it
the
was
kind
a
of
nice. Binder.
It was a nice
very nice binder. I got a picture of it. But the reality was is that most people just felt like they were getting ripped off. That these companies going after them were either coming to them with prices that were so outlandish that it was like, why did you even waste my time getting me excited for this when you know I can't afford $20,000 a month for marketing?
Right.
Or it was, you know, they promised me that they would do this one thing and they never did it and they disappeared my money and I never got anything out of it.
So marketing is a really interesting kind of field to be in. And if I were you, I would feel so frustrated by people like me. And here's why I say that. Because when you get into that, there's so many wrong expectations that the business owner has about a marketing consultant. Right? Because at the end of the day, the binder, whatever the plan is, the results come back on my ability to execute according to that. Right? And so sometimes there's expectations that aren't right. Talk about some of those dynamics. How did you kind of bridge that initial skepticism with some of the people you're meeting with?
Well, one of the things I immediately realized, and this was coming because I was in the corporate world for all these years, is that I had become obsessed with meaningless metrics. And I think this is all marketers are guilty of this. Like, we love seeing a nice like to share ratio. Like, that just gets us going. But you know what? Who that doesn't matter to? The guy buying the ads. Because the only thing he cares about is, did this make me money?
Conversion.
And so yeah. One of the main things was I was like, I have to make my entire pitch about the only thing I care about is, do you have more money or less money in your pocket? That's
it. Oh, so right? you had to take what was important to them and make it your vernacular.
So yeah. And also in the corporate sales, you were doing our corporate consultant, you were doing marketing consulting or?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah. You were doing marketing consultant corporately. And is that anywhere from like, you'd mentioned likes and shares. I mean, are you doing that on social media? Are you doing that website marketing, SEO optimization, or what does that mean?
So I actually came through like film school. So I specialized in content marketing early in my career. I got right out of school, I got a pretty good reputation about being able to fix broken productions. So a lot of times I would get called in when things had gone totally off the rails and they needed someone that was going to be the bad guy to get everybody back in line and like start paddling again.
They called.
And
the
so
fixer.
that I built up a reputation for doing that. A university called me and wanted me to come in to insource. They had been paying $350,000 a year to an agency in Manhattan to do all their video work. And wow, they were like, we want to insource this. We want to build our own mini agency. Can you come and build us an agency? And so I did that. And as I was doing that, I realized I didn't really want to be in production anymore. I had kind of fallen out of love with it. And I was like, but I really like this marketing thing. Like, I really like that. And so like, you know, it first started with a client, like me sitting on the phone with one of my production clients. And I spent like 2 hours with him describing like how to use the video we had produced for him in a marketing campaign. And at the end of it, he was like, you know, you should probably charge me for this. And I was like, I couldn't even conceptualize that someone would buy that from me. I was like, yeah, I guess I could. Like, that's that cool. So I started down that path of becoming a marketer. And so I had all this content background. So that was naturally where I started, was like, view count and likes and shares and like, how well is this video being received and engaged with? And then that spread out to, well, how do I run the campaigns to get the views? And then that spread out to, well, what else can I do to get views? And then it kind of grew and grew and grew until at the end of my corporate consulting, I was doing a lot with like data analytics and building dashboards for the sponsors I was working with that would show them all the data. Like we put together these unbelievable reports. And what still killed me, even at the corporate level, was how little, like how all this data was so great. And we're looking at it on the back end going like, wow, this is fantastic. And then we would check the logins for the dashboard and the client wouldn't even log in.
Oh, like, wow.
They didn't even
so much into it, but they,
yeah.
Using
and so
it
messed with my head. And I think that's what first got me started thinking like, they don't care about this stuff. Like, this stuff means nothing to them. It only means stuff to us because that's how we're, as marketers, we're judging ourselves based on that because we don't know the revenue picture.
So
we don't know that side of it.
This is just, let me pause real quick and make a business application more generically for anybody. Communication is not just what is said, but it's what's heard. And right. You realize that what you were saying was falling on deaf ears. So you had to change what it is that you are saying in order for it to be heard. And I think a lot of the time our ego stands in the way of that. And a lot of our success with whoever our client, our customer is, a lot of that success comes from us kind of adopting what's important to them and setting aside, you know, the data that we find to be so nice or so good. Like, at the end of the day, it doesn't care. Like, the thing that makes me laugh in a realtor world. So Seth and I are both full-time real estate agents. Every year, inevitably in the spring, you'll see all these billboards. It's like $10 million agent. This brokerage did $200 million this last year. And one of my buddies pulled me aside one time and he's like, why do realtors do that? Mm-hmm. When I look at that, I don't think, oh, wow, I should call somebody from that brokerage and they should sell me a home. Like, it doesn't translate to the end consumer. And so it's just more of like a puff piece for all, you know, for any, that messaging is directed at other realtors, not like, you know, clients and customers in the community. Just trying to make that bridge. But so I think for our listeners trying to kind of bring some relevance today, you know, the idea of, you know, using that phrase, the offer, you help people craft the offer. What is it that you are bringing and how does that convey or come across to your intended audience? In the investment realm, you know, if you're listening to this, your offer is your presence. It's how you approach sellers for property. It's how you market yourself to find partners and network in the real estate investing community. It's really any touch point with somebody that you would want to do business with, and how do you come across to them? So, you know, a great way is to go on LinkedIn and to look at some of the high-level people and their profiles, because those profiles are communicating their offer. What are they, you know, who are they trying to partner with? Mm-hmm. How do they come across? What's unique about them? What is their area of expertise? And you can kind of look at it through those lenses and see the intentionality that's behind that. But Drew, this is what we want to really unpack today, is putting yourself out there on the digital marketplace is actually, it's a really vulnerable thing. A lot of the time that I'll come to that crossroads of creating some content, putting myself out on a post in a meaningful and engaging way, it's very vulnerable for a lot of reasons. First of all, you don't want to get blasted by somebody because you had a grammatical error or you didn't cite some kind of factual data. There's always those keyboard warriors that are like, oh, I just want you to make a mistake.
There was a real estate post literally just the other day. They had posted something for lease.
Okay.
And one of the first comments I saw, it said, wow, you must be a really terrible person. And the person that posted it, because they were dogging on her because of the rents, they're like, wow, you must be a really terrible person. This is way overpriced. And then she just commented, she said, wow, you seem really fun. And it was like a really funny get back. But it's just like stuff like that. There's people literally out there in the ether, in the internet world, who are really critical of even something as simple as a lease advertisement for a rental property. So
right.
So to your point, it can be vulnerable like that. I mean, it is weird.
And there's a lot of dynamics. And so one of the phrases I think that gets thrown around a lot when you're trying to market your business, your product, your service, even as an investor, is the imposter syndrome. You know, I always tell people, my first 6 months in real estate, I literally sat in front of my computer and I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like zero. And I was like, well, I'm just going to figure it out. And I felt like an imposter. And then Jeff, my broker at the time, would be like, hey, go meet with so-and-so and get this listed. I'm like, okay. I'm going to get back to you on that, you know? And you just have to figure it out. So, but how do you market yourself? How do you create content? How do you brand and bring that offering when you're still learning yourself?
Well, I think the first thing is that you do have to start simple. Like if you are one of the big mistakes entrepreneurs end up making it because of the lack of experience, is they think that because they don't have the experience, they don't have the track record, they need to make everything else about them look bigger, right? This is I know you know this guy.
Yeah.
Goes out and buys a BMW the first day he's with a brokerage, right? Like that they're trying to puff themselves up. They're trying to make themselves look better.
They're compensating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they do that with the offer. And so what they'll do is they will go out there and they'll look at other people that are successful, and they'll go to a team that has 20 years in the business and 5 people working, and they're just all alone, and they're looking at like all the things they do for clients, and they're like, I'm just gonna copy paste. I'm just gonna do all these things. Meanwhile, they don't have the back end to support it. They don't have the experience to know, well, what is my pricing? What does my commission structure need to be? Is some of this coming out of my paycheck, or is the seller paying for this? Am I convincing the seller to go and invest their money in a staging company, or is that coming out of my side? And so like they don't have any of that experience. So what they try to do is they try to create this big, huge, unbelievable offer. And then two things happen. One, people hear it and they go, you, that? No. Like they just don't believe it because they're like,
holy crap, they know.
That doesn't fit, right? It doesn't make sense. Or someone takes them up on it and they lose a bucket load of money because they don't have the experience to support something like that. Yeah. It happens in the agency world all the time. You know, it was very hot and trendy to be a social media agency a couple years back, especially like during COVID. That was like one of those side hustles. It's unbelievably difficult to run an agency.
Like, I know someone who started a social media company agency, and they tried to go out on their own and, you know, start one and marketed themselves. And we got solicited. Great person. You know, I'm sure they're doing a great job. But then they stopped after a year and a half of trying or so, mm-hmm. and kind of started working in house for someone else. It's hard. But it's because of what you're saying. It's everyone on the outside, it's like, man, I'll just start this and be my own boss.
I'm going to work from home.
I'm going to work from home. Yeah. And get all these clients, but it's easier said than done.
So, what would you say?
Buy, I mean, experience. Yeah. You know?
And maybe that's, you know, to your point, where to start is, what's the tension of saying, like, I want to be transparent to communicate like my actual ability. But then also, you know, we do this, we all did this with our wives, right? You know, we all married up, okay? So we had to like navigate the imposter syndrome with our women and be like, no, listen, seriously, I can provide for you. Somehow I got her to say yes, you know? So you're always trying to bat out of your league and kind of reach into a tier of client sophistication that you don't currently have. How do you do that by still being transparent about your ability that may be less than that?
So I think there's two elements here. I think the first element is when you're just getting started, when you are literally at the starting line, humility and honesty go a long way. Like if you go out and you tell someone, listen, I don't have any clients, I'm trying to make a go at this, and if you hire me, I will take half as much as the other guy because I know I don't have the experience, and I will work twice as hard. You can call me at 3 a.m. and I will pick up the phone. That goes a long way because people will look at that and they'll see themselves in that. They remember being the go-getter. They remember cutting their teeth. Everybody's been there. I have people that approach me, and I have people, two types, right? People like that, they always get a shot with me. I will always give them. It doesn't always work out. They're not always good. But if you come to me with that level of humility and honesty, I will give you a shot because mm-hmm. I remember being that guy. So mm-hmm. I think that's the first thing. Once you're more experienced, you do need to keep trying to bat in bigger leagues. The problem is, I think most people assume that when their client moves up in terms of dollar value or like sophistication in their business, that the sophistication in your business goes up equally. And that's not the case. Just because, you know, I've met people that run $10 million businesses that understand marketing worse than, you know, 17-year-olds that I've talked to.
That's true.
Because it's not their world, right? They might be really, really awesome at selling cars, but when it comes to what do we do on Facebook, they're at, you know, your grandma's level. And that's just, we're not all good at all things. And so a lot of people feel like, well, I can't go after that big client because he's going to see that I'm not the $10 million guy yet. The reality is you only have to be one day ahead of them to provide value. It's as soon as that switches, as soon as they're one day ahead of you, that's when you need to worry. But as long as you keep learning and growing as a professional, and in no matter what field you're at, you're always going to be able to go and provide that person value. So it's, and I've had clients surpass me. I have a couple clients that are still on my client roles, but I look at them and I go, man, some of the stuff you're doing, some of the ideas you bring to the table, fascinating me. I'm taking ideas from you now. It happens. It doesn't mean it has to be the end of the relationship, but your goal as an expert, it should be always staying one step ahead of your client.
So what would you say to somebody who would come to Grow House and they're like, I know I need to market myself. I need help, you know, clarifying my offer, what it is I bring value-wise to my intended, you know, client customer base. But they sit there and they're like, you know, I don't even know what I'm good at. Like, I don't even know what's unique about me. And so sometimes people get in a box, and I've been there. You get in the box, you're like, I'm just a real estate agent. Like, I'm just, I work hard and I'm an honest guy, but is that enough? How do you extract out of somebody what is actually their unique kind of sauce?
So if you got a pen and paper, grab it. And I'm going to describe a diagram that I actually developed for myself. And, I never meant to teach this to anybody. It was just something I would kind of do privately. And then I told someone and they said, oh my God, this was so helpful. So now I've actually been teaching people this. So here's the story. you draw an X on the piece of paper, a cross. And in the top box, you list out all your tangible skills, the things that you could do right now that someone could pay you money for. Doesn't have to be in your specific niche. It's just anything. Whenever I would do this, it was always like at a point where I was like, man, do I really want to stay in marketing or not? Like earlier on in my career when I was still in that transition. And I would list out, I can brew beer and I can fix motorcycles and I can, you know, saw wood, like whatever. Whatever skills I have, I would go and list off on this piece of paper. And then in the next box over, you're going to put all the skills that you could learn in the next 90 days. The things that you're not really that good at, but in 90 days of solid focus, you think you could get to a point where you could potentially sell that skill or those skills could support your other skills. And then the bottom two, the first one, so on the, you know, if you're moving left to right, the left box is your red line. And these are the things that no matter how much money someone's going to throw at you, these are things you don't want to do. Like you just don't, you know, it's for me, I never want to sit on the phone and cold call people. I did that. I had my first job was telemarketing, calling people on their birthday for an insurance company. It was terrible, right? Like it's not the person you want to hear from on your birthday. So I don't want to do that. That's a red line for me. If it's a job that involves that, I'm not going to do it. A job that takes me away from my family. I'm kind of a homebody. I like spending time with my family. I don't want to be on the road 364 days a year. That's not me, right? So you write down all your red lines. And in the last box, you write the things that you're truly passionate about. And then you just list off, it could be one thing, it could be five things. And then what you have to do is you have to look at how do your passions and your skills line up? Because the passion at the end of the day, your passion is what's going to get you through all of the hills and valleys, right? Right. You're going to have tons of terrible days as a business owner. That's just part of being a business owner. You're going to have days where you make negative money and it sucks. Right. The passion is what fills that void. It's the passion that keeps you going and gets you up the next morning so you can climb that next hill. If you don't have a passion for something, there's no purpose in chasing it because it's not going to, like I talk to people all the time. They're like, I want to start a drop shipping business. And I'm like, are you passionate about drop shipping? And they're like,
I don't even know what it is yet, but you can make a lot of money at it.
Yeah. Like then you're not going to succeed because the people who are successful are passionate. One of my clients is an Amazon seller and he's a big Amazon seller. He's passionate about selling stuff on Amazon. He eats, sleeps and breathes this stuff,
is
right?
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, not Jeff Bezos, unfortunately. So your passion is really critical. And then once you have that frame of this is my passion, this is the thing I really want with my whole heart, then you just have to look at, well, how do your skills align with that passion? What are the things that you could do with those skills that would tie in well with that passion? And so then you see where your gaps are. Anything that's a gap, you're like, well, you know, I am really passionate about real estate, but I don't want to do residential, right? But you know what? If I could take a course and in 3 months, I could learn commercial real estate. I could get my toes in there. I could break into that. So now all of a sudden, you know what you're not going to do. You know the thing you're passionate about. You know where you need to go next, and you know what your skills are. And so you use that as kind of a stock pot to boil this down. And every time I've done this exercise, I just go through it with a red line and I cross out the passions that don't match my skills because you can be passionate about something and be deeply unskilled, right? Like I'm passionate about music. I'm not a musician.
Yeah.
Right. So you cross that stuff out. You cross the skills that are irrelevant to the passion you chose. You cross out any business you check off any things that you think are going to help you in this business. So like any skills that you can learn. And then once you have that, you start seeing the foundations of a business. And all you have to make sure is, does the business I'm starting to assemble actually look like something that doesn't interfere with one of my red lines? Where it's like, this business sounds great. I would love to be a speaker and talk on stage. Don't want to travel 50 weeks out of the year.
Yeah, right.
This isn't for me. So what else can I do? What else can I do with that same skill set? What are the other businesses out there? So I always start with that. And then the other part is like once they have an idea of like what the business is that they're passionate about or like the rough, like I want to be a lawyer, right? Once you get to that part, then it becomes, okay, why do you want to be a lawyer? Well, I like helping kids. Okay, well, that says family law to me, right? Or I like, you know, my grandmother was abused once and I want to help other seniors not be abused, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, elder law. So it's really, again, going back to that passion about, well, why did you become this thing in the first place? And let's use that as now the frame to move forward in your business.
That's really good because, you know, the people can sense inauthenticity, okay? And, you know, the people that can sense it the best are children. They can tell when someone's disingenuous. And generally speaking, so can everybody else, right? So they kind of know the BMW, like, you know, that's a lease and you just got that a couple of days ago. And, yeah, you know, we'll wait 12 months and see what happens kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but the passion, though, that's genuine. That's authentic. And that is, it's also contagious to communicate that. So let's kind of finish out the last third of this topic before we go into some of our show segments. One dynamic that I personally struggle with that I think a lot of people do is entrepreneurs, they want their cake and they want to eat it too. And what that means kind of in this context is I want to kind of convey who I am, but I also don't want to limit myself. I want everybody. I want the widest, you know, audience possible, as many leads as possible, while not diluting, you know, my differentiators. So talk about kind of that paradox of like you have to niche in order to like communicate who you are, but actually limiting yourself and focusing is not a limiting thing overall. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. So this is such a, it's a good question, but I always, from a marketer's perspective, I think of this as such a weird thing because people feel like they have to make the Sophie's choice in their business about like who they target. And like, they can never take it back. Like if I'm going after, you know, senior citizens who are about to go into nursing facilities, I can never market to anyone else besides that one group.
I've chosen this. This is who I am now.
Yeah, you know, I've made this bed. I couldn't possibly unmake this bed. Like it's just kind of silly because as a business owner, I don't have just one offer. I have several offers. I have offers for all different people. I have a meeting later tonight with a guy who I'm helping him with his investor deck, right? We haven't even talked about my work doing helping people raise capital. Why? Mm-hmm. It's not what we came to talk about, but that's another offer. So if you have a tech company and you're trying to raise capital, I have something just for you. If you are a new coach or consultant and you're trying to build a coaching or consulting business, I have a thing that teaches you how to do that. I don't talk about it in the realm of the agency because the people who are interested in me on this platform are not those people. So why would I talk about those other offers? I can still have them. I can have as many as I can have 1,500 different offers. It doesn't matter that you're not limited. You don't have to pick. You just have to pick, what are you going to work on today? Right? What do you want? Who do you want to focus on today? Let's focus on somebody. Let's try it. If we make a bunch of money, great. If we don't, there's always tomorrow we try something else. So yeah, you know what? The senior citizen play didn't really pan out. Let's try young couples. Let's try the commercial angle. Let's try the fix and flip angle. Just pick one. Go with it for a while. See if you can make money. I think the other problem that comes into that is then people feel like, well, okay, I'm going to cycle through these too quickly. I'm not going to, I have too many things going on. And it's like, yeah, you need some discipline. You need to be able to say, I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to spend X number of dollars, X amount of time on this one thing. And if it doesn't work, and here's the criteria I'm going to use to judge whether it works or not. And if it doesn't work, then I'm going to move on. But I'm not going to do something else until that criteria is met, till I can say yes or no, this is what I want to do. Because what ends up happening is most people who apply themselves to one specific niche, they do find success. More times than not, they find out they don't want to work in that niche. Right. It doesn't matter how successful it is. They've just like, oh, I don't really like doing that. Like, I don't like doing, what's it called? The estate work. Like, I'm just, that's right. Not,
yeah.
Dealing with crying families just isn't really my jam. I don't want to do that. You know?
No, that's good. That's good. Dispelling that notion that you have to pick just one thing. That I think that's helpful just to step back from that and recognize that there are different problems that you can solve for people and just knowing how to communicate what those are in the right context.
Yeah, 100%. I just used this analogy earlier today, and I think it's apt. Like, I think all of your clients would know Warren Buffett, right? You see, if you saw him in the newspaper, you know, you see him on YouTube on a video, right? But he's kind of, you know, he's just an old guy. Like, he's he doesn't have you know, a look where, like, if you saw him walking down the street, you'd be like, oh my God, Warren Buffett. Like, imagine if he just showed up on your doorstep, knocked on your door, and offered your wife to coach her in investing for $1,000. Like, your wife would probably kick. You'd be like, get out of here, you creep.
Like, you'd be like, you'd call the area agency council and you're like, listen, I think there's a geriatric that's wandering maybe from.
Exactly. Like, you would,
babe, that's Warren
because
Buffett.
The context is wrong. Right.
Yeah.
You don't expect to see him at your door offering you investment advice for $1,000. It's just everything about it's wrong. And so if you go for too big of an audience, you're never going to land a solid punch because you're not making something for anyone. You're making something for everyone. And everyone's different. Everyone's needs are different. Everyone's reason for selling or buying is different. Are they leaving the state? Are they losing? Are they changing jobs? Are they trying to buy investment properties? You if you try to just cast the biggest net possible, what you end up getting is just a bunch of dead fish. You get people that waste your time, who don't really know themselves, who are then not going to be motivated, who you're going to have to chase, and who are going to end up just filling up your Rolodex with a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. We're going to jump into our smaller pocket segment. So Drew, go ahead and tell us about something that went wrong as you were trying to start your business, or maybe it could have been when you were with the consulting, you know, kind of more commercially consulting. What went wrong, and then what did you learn from it?
So I was thinking when you asked me this earlier, I was like, there's a couple of good ones, but I think this is the one that I learned the most from. I used to have business partners for about a year. After 2020, I took on two business partners for all of 2021, and then they exited. I bought them out in 2022. But during that time, we kept coming into an issue where I would cap out my capacity and then I couldn't sell. And so it was this awful pattern of I'd sell, cap out capacity, couldn't sell. I'd have to wait for clients to churn, which is a terrible thing to want your business to fail so that you can go out, raise prices and sell. It's not a good, that's not a happy pattern. Like, that's ugly, right? And so my business partners and I were looking at it and they're like, well, we just have to get someone else in here to sell. That's the solution, is because if you're just doing the client management, which is what you're good at, and we just get someone else in here to sell and then do more of the like account management, touchy-feely stuff, like we could make this work. And so we went on this whole long process of interviewing and finding the 10 to 5 to 1 to the offer. And we hired him and he was with us for like 6 weeks. And there's a bunch of reasons it didn't work. But what I learned most from it, after spending thousands of dollars on this process and ending up in the same place I started, which was I didn't have enough capacity and I was not charging enough, and all of the things that were wrong with my business at that point, was that I was trying to get rid of a fundamental part of what it means to be an entrepreneur because I wasn't comfortable with it. And I forgot that the whole reason we get into entrepreneurship is because we're not ever comfortable. Mm. Like, I was avoiding the thing that made me want to do this in the first place. Like trying to convince yourself that you shouldn't be doing sales for your own business is just kind of ludicrous until you achieve a sense of scale in which that's the only option because there's only 24 hours a day. I can't call hundreds and hundreds of people every day.
Right.
And so
easy to be like, that was an easy solution. Like, oh, find someone else to do the sales and then I can work with clients.
Yeah. But that's not how this game works.
Right. Right.
Like, you have to be the one that's selling, because the other thing that came out of it was that I didn't know how to sell this. I was changing prices every 4 weeks because I was trying to see what's the upper band. Like, we keep capping out. I have to keep raising prices. And we'd raise prices and then expectations would raise and then the work would raise. And it was just this cat chasing its tail over and over. And so in my mind, I was like, oh, well, I just, if I get rid of this one piece, then all the other stuff will sort itself out. It's like, no, all that did was now add another point of pressure to where what I really needed to do. And what I did do is I stepped back and I examined what we were doing. And I said, this isn't working. This model isn't working. I need to fundamentally change how we're selling this, how we're pitching it, how we're going to market with it. And once I did that, the business quickly doubled in profitability, like overnight, because all of a sudden I realized that I could sell people. That wasn't the problem. The problem was I had no joy in selling because I was seeing it as I'm losing money with every client I recruit. I'm all the time it's taking me and all the clients I can't recruit because it's taking me so much time. And so that was a big moment of like, and it took me actually talking with a sales consultant because I was like, I don't understand why I'm good at sales, but I hate sales. And I was like, I want you to figure out, like, am I doing something wrong? Do I just not have a good process? And he's like, no, you're just trying to escape this like unavoidable truth that you should be doing the sales in your business for now. Right. Like, not forever, but at this point, at this crucial point, that's the biggest thing that you can do to grow the business. And once I accepted that, I hadn't had any problems. Wow. And I've still fallen back. Like I got to a point last year where I hired a sales guy because I was like, oh, I'm gonna have all these leads. Like maybe I'm wasn't ready yet. Wasn't ready. Wow. Like it'll happen. One day it'll happen. But I think too many people go immediately to, I need a sales guy. I need to get this off my plate.
Yeah.
Before they're ready, before they've really achieved the scale to make it necessary, just to get out of the icky pain of, I don't want to have to sell anymore. I don't want the cold call. I don't want to pretend to be friend, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Wow. It's hard to really diagnose what actual problems are in business. You know, you're kind of like, it's like the sleight of hand. It's like, hey, it's over here. And really the problem is over here. And getting to the bottom of that is tough.
Well, and that's the problem with when you're not selling generalist search services. Like, a generalist marketing agency can probably get to having a salesman, like a secondary salesman, a lot quicker because they're just, you're dealing with companies that are just like, we just need someone. We fired our last agency because they let our account get hacked or like whatever. We just need someone to fill the gap and keep posting stuff and, do our cold email. We already have the systems built. We just need bodies to fill the machinery.
Oh, right.
When someone comes to us, like they're looking for a solution. So if I'm not there providing that solution, then what's the value of being on a call with someone on my team?
Yep.
You know, so that's the challenge that it's been. But I've just accepted. It's just, we'll get there eventually, but I just can't rush it. It's just like any good thing in life. You got to let the cake bake.
It'll be what a great moment, though, when you're at that point. So you'll be like, now we're ready. All right, we're going to go into what we call our little nugget. So, Drew, what is one practical takeaway or piece of advice that our listeners can implement to their real estate investing businesses or business in general?
So I would always lead with empathy. Empathy is a very scarce commodity in our world. And when you have it, you stand out. And one thing I try to do in every ad I write for a client, and the reason our ads are so successful and the reason our clients are successful is because when I'm writing an ad, I'm not talking about all the shiny gizmos that you're going to get when you buy this thing for $19.95. What instead I'm talking to them at a near spiritual level about the pain they're going through and how we understand it. And so by positioning that empathy first in your interactions and by becoming known as someone who cares, that will lead you more clients than anything else in the world. You could be the world's best copywriter, but if you don't have empathy in your copy, no one is going to care because you're not going to stand out. There's tons and tons and tons of great offers, tons of great realtors out there. But if you're the one that can talk to them in their language and explain to them the pain that they're going through in a way that makes them go, man, this guy gets it. Like, he just knows. It's like he's reading my mind. And that's always the best compliment I always get on sales calls or when my clients get sales calls. It's like people always say, it's like you were reading my mind. Wow. It's like, yeah, because we do everything in our power to make those ads just packed full of empathy so that people can see like we do get it. We're in this business for the right reason. We're here to help. We're absolutely 100% authentic in our authentic in our empathy. And once people feel that, and people can tell if it's fake, it's very easy to spot fake empathy.
Yeah, right.
When you really have it and you put it on display, it's like, you know, it's the secret. Like, that's the secret.
I like you said, it's a rare commodity. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's well said. What's been one of the best resources in your business development?
Oh, man. Like a person or a place or
This podcast or something.
Yeah, person, place, or thing.
I'm a weekly reinvest listener. no, you know what? I think there's a couple of names that really come to mind. And he gets a lot of heat now. He didn't used to, but Alex Hormozi. Like,
oh, yeah.
Alex Hormozi is a very, very smart marketer. I don't care if people think he's like some alpha Chad gym bro, like the man's worth like $500 million. Like he's very, very good at what he does. And he's very transparent about the education he puts out. And honestly, I don't for some of the pieces he puts out, I don't even bother writing courses about them or writing content about them because he's covered it so completely and succinctly that there doesn't need to be another voice on that topic.
Wow.
For some of the, not everything, right? Like he's coming from his own perspective, but there are definitely pieces I read that says he is, he's the next generation of true marketing gurus, the kind of gurus that like the David Ogilvies of the world, the ones that we all look at and go like, well, their place is cemented in the wall. Like you can't take them down. Wow. I think Russell Brunson's another one, you know, he's been around forever and he's very salesy. But, you know, he kind of looks like you a little bit, but he's a very, very smart guy. Like he did he's made a bunch of really incredible business plays in for ClickFunnels and just for his overall business. And so I'm always a happy recipient anytime an email from him comes in and has a new book for sale or a new webinar or something. I'm like, give me all you got because the man knows how to put together a presentation.
Yeah.
It's always a good sign to talk to somebody who is able to learn from people in their industry. You know, back to the humility thing that you talked about in the very beginning, always having that. I'm a huge proponent. People ask me like, what's the biggest advice, you know, the biggest single piece of advice you can give me in marriage, in business? I mean, really in life, and it's humility. It's just recognizing where you are and that you don't have it all figured out and growing from that. So, Drew, what would it look like for people to follow your success and connect with you?
Sure. So you can find us at growhouse.org, growhaus.org. You can follow, we're Growhouse on pretty much all the platforms. I'm personally most active on TikTok and Twitter, but we have channels everywhere. Really, if you're in the process of launching a business, if you're trying to put together that offer, if you're trying to figure out, you know, what is the thing that's going to make you unique and stand out, I'd invite you to book a call with me. I mean, I can't, I never promise people that I'm some kind of magical guru that you're going to rub my head and I spit out gold coins or anything, but every once in a while, I'm pretty good at my job. So, you know, if you're looking for someone to just be a sounding board to for some of your ideas and help you get some clarity, I'd encourage you to visit the website and book a call with me.
Well, it's very clear that you've spent a lot of time not just thinking about this, but doing this for other people just in our conversation today. So thank you for taking the time to explain some of this and really unpack it for our guests.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It was a great conversation. I appreciate the time.
Awesome. Thank you. As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.